Blog Talk Radio.
Without the light, or the darkness comes. Hold through the night, the shadows will run. Fend off the enemy. The jubilee with all the fire we can breathe. We're singing all day and you can't tame it. High tide, low tide, you know. Night time, the morning time, yeah. We're going strong, heading up, down the river. Oh Lord, I feel the reveling. I feel a change on the rise. The man who's lost his soul can't take a stand when his flame's gone cold. Fend off the enemy. The jubilee with all the fire we can breathe. We're singing all day and you can't tame it. High tide, low tide, you know. Night time, the morning time, yeah. We're going strong, heading up, down the river. Oh Lord, I feel the reveling. I feel a change on the rise.
Bustin' chrome, got a nigga duckin' zones in the sky. Home alone, but you know I got my dogs by my side. In the zone, getting money, making music, getting hot, yeah.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
Peace after war.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
Yeah. How many you ride for me? Jump in the car and ride for me. God's inside of me, though the devil's on the side of me. Hit a nigga in the shoulder, make him shoulder lean. When we beefing, it ain't over when we throw them things. For the money, we gon' scheme, no joke, ting. For the team, we gon' play like this but a dream. Could see it in their eyes, how the police has noticed me. I know my grandmother's spirit be watching over me.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
Now I'm talking it, middle finger to the government. Out in public, I might be on some other shit. Looking fresh as hell like I hit a lick. Screw your bitch face, hit it with the bitter dick.
I'm wrong if I wanna get it on tonight. I bustin' cool, got a nigga duckin' zones in the sky. Home alone, but you know I got my dog by my side. In the zone, getting money, making music, getting hot, yeah.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
Peace after war.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
Eddie warming for peace, I never turn my cheek. Unless I'm up with some cheeks, instead of getting deep. When that phone starts ringing, you know I gotta go. No, I ain't bullshitting, you know I'm out the dough. Girl, I know how I know. When you give it to me, I just take it like a pro. I love the way you get back, time to get back to that dough. I'm never lacking, I be on some shit you never know.
I'm warring for thee. Peace after war, warring for peace, and peace after war.
If I got static, I don't tell nobody. Know I'm fly, run down on them like I need a pilot. Hopping out, styling, I don't need no stylist. Niggas stay wildin' like I'm cool with
Ollie. I'm wrong if I wanna get it on tonight. I bustin' cool, got a nigga duckin' zones in the sky. Home alone, but you know I got my dog by my side. In the zone, getting money, making music, getting hot, yeah.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
Peace after war.
Warring for peace, and peace after war.
All right, all right. Okay. All right, family. That's my man, Corey Fluke. We are back in the building, trustee training. Today's topic, the truth about the income tax, part four. This is going to be an ongoing series because as long as you're listening, as long as you keep doing what you're doing, we're not going anywhere. So hopefully everybody definitely get a chance to definitely get it in. I hope you got your questions ready. I hope you got your materials ready. I hope you got your study material. You got your notes ready. I'm going to be going over a lot of things. We're going to cover everything from trust administration. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk about a lot of things in general. I had to just kind of let you know how today's show is going to kind of go in terms of class. I had a friend of mine. Well, not really a friend. More like, you know, it was family. My brother called me today. And hit me with a real question. You know, he's going through some stuff with his employer. And in that regard, they've kind of said that since COVID has affected their sales of the company, they're actually getting ready to lay off about 400 employees. So my brother asked me this question today, and he said, it's like, hey, man, what does it mean if you check your balance in your 401k? Because, you know, I'm putting in for, you know, hardship and hardship withdrawal. And from the time I put in for the hardship till today, I've been seeing it was been like a drastic. He used a significant reduction in what he had in his 401k and what he now has now. And I had to tell him the truth. And sometimes when we tell folks certain things and when they fail to take heed, you never want to be the one to say, well, I told you so. And I definitely want to do that with my brother, especially in his time of need. But, you know, we've been teaching this stuff for well over 4 or 5, really 6 years now. And for those that have been following the protocols and programs, they understand what time it is. Everybody else is kind of just caught off guard. We're just, you know, it was all good just a week ago. You know, now you're part of the statistics. And when you become part of statistics, statistically, they've already done determined the outcome, you know, from their standpoint because they're already moving forward with what they're doing. So I had to tell them that they basically have stolen his life savings. And there was a great pause, and there was a lot of, you know, I could tell he was getting irritable and upset. And I didn't want to come off as if, well, yo, you finna tell me I told you. So I was like, no, you know where I stand with that. I've been telling you this for years, not to put your trust in the public like that. But I'm saying all that to say this. You got to understand that everything that you're dealing with in commerce, there's a business model usually tied behind it. If you're the only one that's dealing with your trust or your estate that's not treating it like a business, then in my opinion, you're really hurting yourself and you're really damaging your legacy. So we're going to talk about legacy planning, legacy building. So keep listening, because if you listen long enough, you'll learn something. Now, what I'm going to give you now is one that I did a while back called 8302 Tax Returns. Keep listening, because if you listen long enough, you definitely will learn something.
Perfection of security interests in United States federal income tax refunds. From time to time, businesses anticipate receiving a large federal income tax refund. When such a situation arises, there may be a desire to borrow against the proposed refund in order to access the anticipated funds more quickly than they would otherwise be available. Secured lenders may also wish to perfect a security interest in future federal income tax refunds to further collateralize existing loans secured by all assets of a borrower. Both sides to a loan transaction may therefore be interested in the method to create and perfect a security interest in a federal income tax refund. Execution of security agreement describing the collateral. Article 9 of the Uniform Commercial Code governs security interests in most types of personal property. Because Article 9 does not expressly exclude federal income tax refunds from its scope, the grant of a security interest in a federal income tax refund is subject to the provisions of Article 9, Del. Code An. Tit. 6, Section 9-109A. Because no section of Article 9 expressly discusses federal income tax refunds, such refunds are deemed to be general intangibles. See Del. Code An. Tit. 6, Section 9-102A. 42. To create a security interest in a general intangible such as a federal income tax refund, a borrower must grant a lender a security interest through a security agreement or similar instrument. Under Del. Code An. Tit. 6, Section 9-203, a security interest is enforceable with respect to specific collateral against the borrower and third parties when a value has been given, i.e., a loan has been made, b. the borrower has rights in the collateral or the power to transfer the collateral, and copyright the borrower has executed a security agreement or similar instrument that describes the collateral, the security agreement, and the UCC-1 financing statement to be filed in connection with it, must describe the collateral in reasonable detail. Del. Code An. Tit. 6, Section 9-108A. Though a description such as all general intangibles is likely sufficient, a reference to the specific federal income tax refund in question, or at least a reference to all federal income tax refunds might be preferable for both the borrower and the lender. Execution of IRS and DOT forms. The execution and delivery of a security agreement coupled with the filing of a financing statement creates and perfects a lender's security interest in many types of personal property. In the case of a federal income tax refund, however, additional steps are necessary to allow the lender to obtain payment of the federal income tax refund directly from the IRS. In addition to the security agreement discussed above and the UCC-1 financing statement described below, a lender should also prepare and have the borrower execute the following IRS forms: A. Form 2848 Power of Attorney, Form 2848, and B. Form 8302 Electronic Deposit of Tax Refund of $1 million or more. Form 8302. Form 2848 allows an individual, other than the borrower, to obtain the federal income tax refund on behalf of the borrower. Part 1, Section 6 of Form 2848 requires the name of an authorized representative who will receive the federal income tax refund instead of the borrower. Form 2848 does not, by itself, authorize the authorized representative to endorse or cash the federal income tax refund. That requires an additional DOT form described below. For purposes of preparing Form 2848, the person named as the authorized representative must either be A. an attorney, B. a certified public accountant, or copyright an enrolled agent as defined in Treasury Department Circular No. 230. In order for the IRS to process Form 2848 quickly, the person listed as the authorized representative should be an individual that has already received what is known as a centralized authorization file or CAF number from the IRS. If there is no such person, the IRS will assign a CAF number to the individual listed as the authorized representative. Form 2848 should be faxed to the appropriate CAF service center. In cases where the lender expects that the federal income tax refund will equal $1 million or more, the lender should require the borrower to execute a Form 8302 authorizing the IRS to wire the proceeds of the federal income tax refund to an account maintained by the lender for the benefit of the borrower, i.e., an account for the borrower that is located at the lender's financial institution. Form 8302 should be filed with the borrower's tax return, if possible. Otherwise, Form 8302 should be mailed to the same IRS address where the borrower files its annual tax return. In addition to the IRS forms referenced above, the borrower must also execute the following DOT forms: A. Form 235 resolution by corporation conferring authority upon an officer to execute a power of attorney for the collection of checks drawn on the United States Treasury, Form 235, and B. Form 234 general power of attorney for the collection of checks drawn on the United States Treasury, Form 234. The DOT forms authorize the lender to endorse the checks, or in the case of a wire transfer, to ultimately deposit the funds in an account for the benefit of the lender. Filing a UCC-1 financing statement. To perfect a validly created security interest in a federal income tax return, a lender must file a UCC-1 financing statement using the description of the collateral contained in the security agreement in the appropriate filing office under the UCC. DEL. Code AN. TIT. 6, Section 9-310A. In most cases where a lender is filing against an entity borrower, that financing statement should be filed in the office of the Secretary of State of the borrower's state of incorporation. DEL. Code AN. TIT. 6, Section 9-307E. Lenders should be aware that following the IRS and DOT procedures outlined in Section 2, above, will not absolutely guarantee that the lender will receive the borrower's federal income tax refund directly from the IRS. First, lenders should be aware that the IRS has not always honored Form 8302 and has in some instances mailed checks despite receiving a Form 8302. Second, a lender must keep in mind that a taxpayer has the right to revoke any of the above referenced IRS and DOT forms. While not a perfect solution to the problem, the loan documents related to the loan secured by the federal income tax refund should prohibit the borrower from revoking any of the IRS or DOT forms and should make any such revocation an event of default. The loan documents should also grant the lender a power of attorney to prepare and submit such forms if and to the extent needed as a result of such revocation, though it is not entirely clear that the IRS or DOT would accept a form executed on behalf of a taxpayer by a power of attorney. Third, a lender should keep in mind that the IRS has the right to use all or part of a taxpayer's federal income tax refund to offset a prior outstanding balance. Therefore, before making a loan secured by a federal income tax refund, a lender should obtain some familiarity with its borrower's prior tax filings and situation to confirm that no outstanding amounts are owed to the IRS at the time of the loan and that its borrower is not under an active audit at the time of making the loan. Mr. Strain and Mr. Flock are attorneys in our Memphis office.
Now, family, one may begin to ask the question, wow, I didn't know a notary could do all these different things. I'll give you a clue. The notaries are labeled as notary publics. It's like a misnomer. But I'm going to clear this up. Notaries make notarial protest that gives creed or credibility, authenticity to any document bearing any truth. They can protest bills of exchange, drafts, notes, and such, because there's a process that one must follow when they're participating in commerce. Mores, write on whatever piece of paper you're writing in terms of your notes. Mores must use a notary when doing anything in the public. Let me explain. the first Moorish science temple was set up to be an embassy, a beacon for all Moors to have their formidable place to perfect the sciences, crafts, administer education, revitalize a culture that was once prominent on this planet that has been purposely hidden and forgotten. It took on a dual role under a form of religious immunity, because when one is practicing, listen to this, one who is practicing has to be subservient to the one who has perfected the craft that others are practicing. In other words, Moorish science created everything that's in existence, especially when it comes to commerce, especially if you're standing in the land that you call America, which is really the Amex or the Amexum. Now, problem is, a huge gap of that history was hidden from the descendants. So the descendants slipped into a slumber-like state and took on other names and appellations because they were no longer connected to their culture. Because of that, what was created actually became a tool to imprison all those that no longer knew who they were, but wanted a benefit because they were subservient to some sort of institutional structure. So when one has gone back to that original mind state of who they are, all of the immunities that they're seeking, they have. But they must deal with these entities in an equal playing field. Now, we're going to not, I'm not going to say I'm an IRS advocate. I'm going to just strictly keep it in the context of commercial activity, especially for my Moors who are trying to put two and two together. Okay. Every tax that is collected on the behalf of the creditors who also, under their articles of incorporation, must pay a tributary tax to your Moorish estate. This is why I warn Moors. You need to know everything about Uniform Commercial Code, UCCs, because you need to know how to recapture your lost estate. The entity that is known as the Internal Revenue Service is an accounting firm for the company that calls itself the United States of America. It is a private corporation that must collect taxes to pay the tributary tax that it was owed when it was incorporated. The problem is, this private corporation went bankrupt. Not once, not twice, actually more than five or six times. Can't really count how many times they really went bankrupt in the aspect of one paradigm. I can say on a different paradigm, I can tell you exactly how many times they went bankrupt when you're looking at it from the right set of eyes. Because of that, commercially, those in the Patriot Movement began to reveal information about how this private corporation came into existence. The private corporation came into existence because when the Constitution was written, it literally was written to protect the corporation from further encroach or approachment by the original creditor, because they're trying to get, you know, they're trying to get it right. Now, we're going to back up. They have been paying your moisture state with gold, silvers, gold bullion, silver plates, all the worldly treasures that they actually have acquired through commercial trade. A portion of that tax must be paid in a tributary tax to your Moorish estate. But guess what? There are a lot of non-Moors who are using your appellations to stay in good graces with your Moorish empire while denying to you what they're doing. So let me explain even further, and this is where the notaries come in, of what you have to remember. These are going to be terms that I want you to write down. And everything I'm going to give you is going to be synonyms of what you know as public and private. The thing I'm going to give you is going to be an equal and opposite. You have synonyms that mean similar, and then I'm going to give you antonyms that means opposite. And every phrase that I give you is going to be there's going to be an equal and opposite antonym. Synonyms mean same, antonyms mean opposite, okay? So the term, the word, public, P-U-B-L-I-C, the antonym for the public is private. Okay, you have the public, then you have the private. And one cannot exist without the other. To see one, you must know the other exists. To know one, you must know that the other exists. If you see one, you're seeing both of them. You just have to know that. Because the contracting that comes from these two phrases is 90% of your problem. Let's go further into this. The word public has other synonyms that refer to the status of public. Now, again, if you pay real close attention and you take you out what you call a piece of paper and you write on that piece of paper the word public and you draw a line under it, I want you to write these terms down. I want you to get them into your psyche. I want you to begin to unravel this spell of Leviathan that has all of us perplexed about how do I use my commercial activity or energy. How do I do? You got to know, and I'm going to show you the magic in this. I can tell this to you all day. If you take a pen and a piece of paper and write it down, you're actually doing something that's going to lock into your psyche because subliminally this will stick with you. And once you have writ it from your own hand, once you have spoken it out loud into the universe, once you analyze this internally and externally, it's going to be very hard for these Luciferians to get you back on the plantation, especially though.
Yes, I was a member, but I was forced into this way of life. Hey, look, I've been dealing drugs ever since I was 12 years old. See, I didn't have the chances that you have, Miss Hawkins. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, Miss Hawkins. And I wanted to get out. They threatened to kill my mother.
Who are you talking about, Mr. Brown? What they?
They. Look at it. Kareem Akbar. That's right, the educated brother from the bank. He's the real head of the CMB. The brains behind the whole thing.
I told you, this thing is bigger than Neil Brown. I got to look. Come on down. I'm taking a whole lot of people with me.
Order in the court. Order in the court.
All right, peace and love, family. Now, to get into the meat and potatoes, the last part that we covered was the truth about the income tax, part three. And in part three, we discovered that there's only one class of individuals that are actually responsible for the taxes, and these are the individuals that are actually those that are in the industry of alcohol and tobacco and firearms, and then those who have voluntarily started using the Social Security number. So one may ask, well, what do I do to get out of harm's way? What are some of the things I can do to put certain things in place? Well, I'm going to hit you with a series of things that's going to help you spark that thinking. So get your notes. Get ready. I will be coming back to you to ask if you've got any questions. Remember, if you listen long enough, you'll learn something. Let's just say that all trusts start with a fundamental principle, first off. Because since we're talking about taxes, we're going to have to talk about the type of trust that's going to be used to get you the proper tax position. This concept that I'm going to give you is called infinite banking. Listen, take notes. I hope you're ready.
Good day, good day. You are now tuned into the vault. Trust Christian, own nothing, control everything. Just wanted to do an episode today. Today's episode is going to be about private banking with life insurance. And so I wanted to do a post with a special individual that we do business with at the vault. His name is Christopher Holt. You know, many accolades comes with this individual's title. We do our best to do business with people that, you know, we can do long-term business with. So I'm very excited about being able to have Chris join us in this conversation and bring and move forward. So just really excited about that. And we're going to get him to join here. We're going to have a great conversation. Private banking with life insurance. This is one of our experts. So Chris, you're live.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, alrighty. Yes, this is about the work, you know. Alrighty, so we're doing this as special on Facebook. We usually don't have the audience that we have from the Facebook to the YouTube with the vault. And so we're going to do that today. We're going to start out on Facebook, and this is going to be downloaded and posted onto the YouTube channel and then as well as the iTunes channel later on. So, you know, Christopher Holt, could you introduce yourself and just, you know, let us know your background? I know a lot of people are interested in the topic, which is private banking with life insurance.
My name is again Chris Holt. I've been in the business now for with the banking side of it, at least for about 10 years now. Experience in financial services since 1992. So I've been around things, came at this a few different ways to finally get to where we are right now.
Okay, awesome. All right, Chris, why are we talking about private banking with life insurance? Could you tell us why that's important for common people to have this type of discussion?
Well, I think for most people, a lot of it is about taxes, being able to save on taxes, also being able to have a structure where they can have a system that can take care of a debt issue. What we realize and what we teach people in our organization is that, what is it, those numbers, 40% of all of your dollars that you make go out in form of taxes, taxations. That is going to be not just income tax, but that's taxes that you pay on your cable, gas tax, state tax, which is income tax.
Sales tax.
Any other tax you can think of. Taxes are
sales
huge.
Tax. Oh,
sales
yeah.
Tax. Yes, absolutely. All of that is a huge piece of the puzzle that is being just taken automatically from you just by you simply just doing everyday life or making money. After you've done all of that, paid your taxes, paid off your, you know, done the things you go out to eat and do the things that you want to do, excuse me, you're really left with 23% of your total dollars that you have to be able to live on. So what we show people how to do and with our system and what we have put together is to be able to increase the amount of money that they're able to save, pay less in taxes, get rid of the debt and the interest that is going out of your pocket that you're paying to other individuals. And with this system, with it being a system that is not taxable to you and showing you how you can actually become your own banking system, it's something where every household should have it. I don't care what your situation is.
Facts.
Every household should have it.
And the thing about it is, Chris, is this is nothing new. This is something that's been going on since, you know, the 1500s and when banking was kind of, you know, around with the Rothschilds. You know, banking has been around. Families have practiced banking. And so this is the form of private banking, and we're talking about it through specifically through life insurance and why this is so important. And so, you know, that's very important. But I guess people want to know is how are people implementing these private banking policies, Chris, because they're like, okay, you know, we know that there's things exist now. A lot of people don't even have this in their, in their consciousness. So how is it that these things were created in order to even do this in the first place? Could you tell us that?
Well, these types of programs have been around now for over 200 years. It's not something that's new. You've got companies like JCPenney's, Walmart, Walt Disney, was created through these types of policies. There are huge conglomerates that were created simply by a banking policy that they knew how to structure hundreds of years ago. And now these kind of programs now have been modernized to work with just about any family. You don't have to be wealthy to do it these days. Basically, it's something where if you have a representative that you work with that understands the infinite banking concept, you have to be able to structure a life insurance product to where it will fit the system, because not all insurance products will allow you to do this type of a system. When you think about putting this together with an agent, what will happen a lot of times is that they will not understand that they need to take a hit on the commission. So they can't structure the policy. They would just for somebody. They have to structure it so that the individual can benefit more on the cash side of the policy. So why do we use life insurance? Why couldn't this be done with a bank or, say, through any other type of investment? Well, life insurance is the only vehicle that allows you to be able to have a umbrella of taxation where the money you put into it and the money you grow within it, as long as you stay within limitations of that policy, it is the only vehicle that will allow you to be able to have that all come out to you tax-free with no limitations as to how many of these policies you can have. There is no other vehicle that will do that.
That's a fact, Chris. We got to say that's a fact.
That is a fact. Absolutely. So if there was, I'm sure there'd be other types of programs out there people would be talking about, but I'm telling you, there is no other system that allows you to be able to do what life insurance allows you to do when it's structured correctly. That is a huge thing. It has to be structured correctly.
Okay, and that's how it's done. Is it structured correctly? So that means you're like, how many agents do you think are out there like you, Chris, in the United States right now?
Oh, jeez. I'd say probably less than 1,000 nationally. I would say that actually would do these types of policies and understand them, the inner workings of them. There's less than 1,000, over 1 million agents out there, but most of them are just simply selling you insurance.
Chris is amazing. Chris said 1,000 agents. Chris is one of 1,000 out of 300 million. Thank you, Chris. I'm in good company. I like being in rare company, man. You know,
you're in rare company, man. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would like to think of myself as in the top 1,000 of what I do, but man, I mean, I the numbers for what I do is different. But geez, I mean, that's awesome. So it's how it's structured, and that's what makes you so unique. So,
right.
How to? How do we get involved with something like this if it is at the level where, you know, I got to go to a special guy? So now we know that you're the special guy, you're the legal guy, you know, how do we do it?
Well, the first step is to get a snapshot of where you are. One thing that we do is we do a data sheet on everyone, and we'll give you a picture of your individual situation, because everybody's situation is different. Not everybody is going to fit this system. It's just simple as that. You got to have some discipline in place. You got to have some discretionary income in place. There's different things that you've got to have in place in order for this to even work for you. So, and you got to qualify for it. It is life insurance. So we've got to do a data sheet on you to find out your individual situation and see how the numbers would work for you. That is the first step. You can request, of course, a data sheet from me. You can email me at info at ffecorlando.com. That's info at First Financial Education Centers, Orlando.com, FFECOrlando.com. And just request the data sheet. I'll be happy to send that out to you. Also, there's a little presentation I send out to you, kind of explain to you how this works, give you a basic synopsis of creating your own family banking system, and gives you an example in that presentation of how it worked for a family that we call Mark and Joyce in this presentation. So we try to basically educate you on the system, whether or not it is for you or not. My whole thing and my company's goal is to educate you first and foremost so that you make an informed decision. This is not just about putting you into something and you have no clue what this is. That's not what we're about. Any and everyone that I talk to, they understand the inner workings of it because I'm constantly grilling them on, okay, well, what's this situation? What should you do when this happens? What should you do when that happens? They can almost tell me how it works. So by the time we're done with you and before you spend a dime, you will know exactly how this can or cannot work for you.
Info at First Financial, what is it, Education Centers?
Yes, FFECOrlando.com.
All right, I'm going to type it into the chat for people that didn't hear it. Orlando.com?
Yes, sir.
All right, cool. I typed it in the chat, everyone. It's in the chat. Info at FECOrlando.com.
Yeah.
And so, all right, Chris. We do have a question for you. I'm going to get to it. But, yeah, Chris, so the thing about it is, okay, you know, they have to, you know, pretty much know where they are. And I think that's a big issue in the marketplace to address out here nowadays. A lot of people don't know where they are, man.
Right.
And, you know, I really do want to do an episode about, you know, people not utilizing the debt.
Right.
I think that me and you can have a great conversation. There are a lot of people losing household capital income. Wealth for their children's education, for their own education is being lost because they don't use private banking. And
right.
A lot of people don't understand, it's not, you know, this isn't colloquial, conventional, go down to some bank and get your insurance policy stuff, you know, and I really do encourage people to think about that is when you have when you're paying for anything, you are practicing a form of banking. And point being is the banking that we're talking about is specifically is private banking and specifically family household banking on a daily basis. And so I think that a lot of people, they think they try to separate banking like, oh, that's the bank and then this is me. No.
Right. Yeah.
Your family household is operating as a bank. There's money that comes into the household. There's money that leaves that household.
Big
and by money leaving a household, there's a form of money changing going on, in and out, cash flow, all of that good stuff. And I just really want people to really understand that, you know, there's a different way out there.
Absolutely.
And there is a way that's being practiced. And like you say, you know, knowing where you are can really enable you to say, okay, this is where I'm at, so I can institute a banking policy.
Right.
This is just where you are. It's not because, you know, you're anybody special or anything like that. It's because you just implemented the policy. And that's the biggest thing is how many people are going to institute the policy. I guarantee you everybody on this line or most people are going to get cash flow. They're going to get cash flow for sure. They're doing business. I mean, there are people listening to this that make thousands of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a month, and that money is not being insured. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have insurance on your company, that's the business Warren Buffett is in. He's in the insurance business. So I think it's very misleading when individuals don't understand why companies do corporate buybacks.
Yeah.
When you hear these things in the public, these are forms of insurance on themselves.
That's
and
correct.
So, you know, I want you all to understand that from this is everything is finance. Everything's paid. If you got money, you're in finance. What do I need to go to school to get a degree for it then? You know what I mean? Everything's finance. We've been dealing with finance since you got your money from your parents for the birthday gift.
Yeah.
If you don't save it, what do? You spend it or you lose it. I mean, it's not too many legal financial terms we need to know here.
But for some odd reason, people go to school, get a four-year degree, and they still don't know what they're doing with their life.
Yeah.
And we're talking about financial tools, financial mindset, financial strategy, and people say, oh, you know, well, I'm doing well. So what if you can put yourself in a position where you're actually practicing what all of these are practicing, which is private family banking, private banking. You see it across the board. You see the Rockefellers. You see the Carnegies. You see, like he even explained, Disney. You see individuals that started these companies. They understand internal private banking tactics. That's it. They understand the rules. They have pieces of – I remember when I first heard one of my mentors, he said, the difference between people that are educated or uneducated, he said, is rich people know which tax forms to fill out and which ones not to.
Right.
It's that simple.
That's pretty much it.
So if you all haven't been educated on the same documents that came out at the same time, whether it's trust documents or whether we're talking about insurance, it's all imperative to get that information. That's it. And we're speaking to a very niche and select audience. You know, everybody's not out for wealth building, wealth generation. But, you know, when someone can tell you, hey, you know, it's less than 1,000 people in a country of 300 million people that, you know, I provide a particular service that is very valued. Like I say, it's encouraging to see, wow, there are still very specialized people in specific fields that we're talking about policies now. Like everybody's heard about life insurance. It sounds good, you know. I might have to get health insurance. But, oh, my gosh, now you're telling me I can do it and it's banking involved in it? Well, I never heard that before. I never knew about that before. So I understand that that's the case, but, you know, like the mentors used to say, well, you don't know what you don't know.
Sure.
So, you know, there's many things that we don't know, ladies and gentlemen, and I think that being open to learn those things are very, very important. So, you know, what – can you paint a picture for us, Chris? What does this look like when a person is involved with you?
What does it look like? Well, I can tell you the end result of it.
Right. That's what we want to know. What are the results?
The end result is that you're going to have a system in place for yourself that on average – If you have a mortgage, you have car payments, you've got student loans, credit card debt, furniture bills, any other debt that you're paying interest out into, you have a system here that is on average is showing people how they can pay all of those debts are off within 9 years and still have a substantial amount of income available to you that on a tax-free basis from the system that you just paid off those debts through. There is no other such thing out there in the world that allows you to be able to do that. I'm talking about you being able to use your money in more than one place at the same time. There is no other system that allows you to do that. And I can show you how that works with life insurance. Life insurance is the key. There's no secret here. Like someone's getting out here telling you, hey, you need to use these types of life insurance policies. And people usually cringe when they hear life insurance. Oh, God, I'm trying to know life insurance. That's because they have no clue of what life insurance can actually do for them. And I'm not talking about when you die. I'm talking about you using that insurance while you are alive tomorrow or the day after you get approved for it. So this is a system that when you really understand it, you will understand that there is nothing else out there like it, nothing at all that can do what it does, nothing else. And if you really understand how to use it, it is a absolute wealth-building system that can be used and has been used, again, by over 200 years. Very large, very wealthy individuals have used this very same system, and it is, now, I'd say within the past 8 to 10 years, it has been something that has gotten more into mainstream. But when I say mainstream, I'm talking about those who have privy to that education. Because a lot of people just aren't in that realm. So that's why you haven't heard of it, because you just haven't been in that realm. But you're here now. Those of you who hear my voice, you are here now. And I'm very savvy on these types of policies. But that's what you would be left with here, is something that's going to give you the benefits of being debt-free, have a system that you can create tax-free income for the rest of your life. And not even talking about the death benefit part of it, have a legacy that you can build for your family for you doing this now while you are alive.
Hey, Chris, I got a good story for you. I remember when one of the mentors, you know, we were in the environment, they're doing a teaching and everything, and one of them said, so basically you could spend down the entire policy, and then literally when you pass, it gets filled back up for the next generation.
That's pretty much how this can work for you. Do it right.
Chris, when they said that, I wasn't even caring about the numbers, man. I'm being honest, everybody. I just said I knew everybody in the room was telling the truth for a lot of different reasons. But when I heard them say that, I think, you know, I'm a concept person. So I heard the concept, and I was like, all right, I got to think he didn't stutter. And then and they kept going. And no one questioned it. I was like, there's a lot of smart people in the room. I like being in a room with people that are smart than me. There's a lot of educated people. And I was like, man, this is a smart environment right here. And this man said, you could spend all the money down. I was like, okay, I'm going to check the numbers back a little bit later when I can sit there and crush numbers. So I did it later. And then I came back, and I was still in the environment. And it was always the same type of thought process. It was the same conversation. You could spend it down. I'm like, so you're trying to tell me, how come no one knows that you can spend the policy? Then I found out, well, people don't have this policy. That was the first thing.
No, they don't.
So of course, they didn't have the policy. But no one ever talked about it like that. But these guys, everyone in the room, I mean, pretty much once you get in the system of trust, you already know. You should be going into the banking system, you know, with this type of stuff. And so when you're in a trust environment and people, that was one of the things, man, these guys were wheeling and dealing in the room. I know the guys that originally taught me the information. I mean, these guys are putting out content right now out of the wazoo of just how many people they're helping to really get going in the system. They have they're really big on what you're talking about, which is paying off the debt, getting people really debt free, utilizing the banking system. And I mean, I have never met one person off the private banking system. And I mean, of course, it's not like a million people that I've met off the private banking system, but the ones that have truly implemented the private banking system, I mean, they've never left it, and these people are all financially okay. And it's just like, wow, that's just the difference in them doing bookkeeping every month in their private banking in their house.
Yeah.
It's just them making sure to put money in a specific place, getting back a specific role. And one of the things I like about even the insurance, guess what, here, why is it so predictable, Chris? Why is it so predictable? You know what I mean? Like, it's so predictable, man. It's like when people sit here and say, oh, how do I get successful? How do I get wealthy? How do I get money? I sit here and I say, there's got to be a formula. I've read way too many books. I'm like, there's a formula. And I know the formula, but this is a part of the wealth formula. Am I right or wrong, Chris?
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And one reason why it's so predictable, it is we're using a predictable product. The product has a guaranteed prediction in it. And we can tell you almost to the day of when a certain thing is going to happen if you do the numbers as we structure them to your individual situation. So we can almost tell you to the day of when you would be debt-free if you did this numbers.
Chris,
amazing.
That's called financial freedom. From that, thank you. That's amazing, Chris. It's like, and that's why it's like when you talk to people about the tools, they're like, oh, man, you know, Christian, you're saying you're dealing with these high net worth clients, but then how do you deal with people that are still common and that have to use the products? And that's one of the products that they can use to benefit their families and things of that nature. And it's just like, you're trying to tell me there's no, like, broke is a thought, just like success is. And the thought of success is actually calculatable. Like, I could calculate me being debt-free if I were in debt. I could calculate to a day, ladies and gentlemen, I could calculate my financial success.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's, Chris, that's mind-blowing, Chris. I mean, is there anything else you'd like to add to that from what we've discussed so far?
A lot of people ask, well, how do I pay for this? Or how do I put this into place? A lot of what we do is finding the dollars that you may not think can be used for these types of systems. We're going to look at money that you're now setting up to be taxed on greatly by putting it into you're putting it into your 401ks or your IRAs, not understanding, truly understanding what type of systems those actually are, that you might want to reduce the amount of dollars that you have going out there into those types of systems. and what this can do versus that, that's a huge dollar figure as to what we can show you the difference of IRA money, 401k money, money that's going to be 100% taxable to you later, to show you how you can adjust some of that and create your own banking system going forward. So, again, reach out, find out what it would look like for you. That costs you nothing but time to do that. And I promise you, I won't waste your time because I don't want you to waste my time. So we're going to get the numbers to you and make sure you understand everything you want to understand. So, hey, you have my email address, info@fsecorlando.com. Send me an email, ask for your data sheet, and we'll go from there.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris, for connecting with us today. And everyone that connected live, I do appreciate all you all that have listened live or listening to replay. And this has just been a great, great episode. You know, if you all have any questions, I know me and Chris are live on Facebook. So if you all have any questions, feel free to type them in. We got a question already in the chat. It was asking about BOLI. Are you familiar with bank-owned life insurance, Chris?
Bank-owned life insurance, I'm assuming that's just another term for it may be these types of policies that someone has put into or reworded it. I'm not exactly sure when they say BOLI. I've heard of COLI, corporately owned life insurance.
Right. You there, Chris? Chris? Uh-oh. Did he go out? Uh-oh. Can everyone hear me? I appreciate that. Somebody said they could hear Chris. That is awesome. Do we have any other questions? Is that me? Uh-oh. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in live. Thank you for tuning in live. I do appreciate that. Thanks, Jacob. I can see you typing that you can hear me. And I do appreciate you all for tuning in live or listening to replay. Chris left his contact information to Chris. Chris is, like I say, a trusted advisor, someone that we really do respect his work and him coming through the vault and blessing everybody and working with us. And
tax day is finally here. Now what? Trustees, please do no miss out on this opportunity. Tax day is finally here and taxpayers may be a little bit baffled by that implication. See, normally taxpayers were expected to file their prospective tax returns by April 15th, but due to this recent COVID-19 pandemic, that date moved to July 15th. Now that July 15th is among us, we have to remember exactly what brought us to this new extension date. Taxpayers and businesses will have until July 15th, 2020 to pay their taxes this year, but the filing deadline is still April 15th. The change was announced on Tuesday afternoon by Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, following President Donald Trump's declaration of a national state of emergency in the United States as a result of efforts to combat the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic and minimize economic disruption. Last week, the President announced he would ask the Treasury Department and IRS to extend the deadline. Taxpayers and small businesses that traditionally face an April 15th tax deadline will be allowed more time to pay their taxes due but are still recommended to file by April 15th. All individual U.S. taxpayers qualify for this extension and do not have to file any special paperwork or extension requests, as the deadline will be automatically extended. The President also recently released disaster aid, urged each state to set up emergency operations centers and hospitals to ramp up emergency response plans. Also announced is the waiving of interest on federally held student loans during the state of emergency. Taxpayers owing taxes can defer payment of up to $1 million in taxes until July 15th. And corporate filers can defer tax payments of up to $10 million. We're waiting to hear if there will be an extension for quarterly estimated payments normally due on April 15th. We encourage those Americans who can file their taxes to continue to file their taxes on April 15th, Mnuchin said. Because for many Americans, you will get tax refunds. It is expected that most state legislatures are likely to follow suit, since most taxpayers file their federal and state income tax returns at the same time. But be sure to check with your state before making assumptions about payment deferrals. 7 states do not have an income tax: Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming. Additionally, Tennessee and New Hampshire do not tax wages earned. California had already extended the state deadline to June 15th. VAPA has a list of changing state tax deadlines. PDF change in the deadline for individuals to pay their annual federal income tax returns is unprecedented at the national level, although the IRS often grants such extensions to more limited geographical areas following disasters. Earlier this month, for example, taxpayers affected by the recent Tennessee tornadoes were granted relief until July 15th of this year. The extended tax payment deadline and penalty relief is likely to be welcomed by taxpayers, said Gail Perry, CPA, a tax professional and the editor-in-chief of CPA Practice Advisor. This is especially true for those who are dealing with family issues relating to the pandemic. The extension is also beneficial to the IRS as that agency might be facing reduced staffing accompanied by taxpayers unable or unwilling to venture into a government office for assistance. As for tax preparers, we will look forward to a busier than usual summer and fall in 2020. The change will have no effect on the millions of Americans who have already filed their taxes this year. IRS procedures to expedite refunds. A corporation may expedite refunds of estimated taxes by filing either 1. Form 4466, Corporation Application for Quick Refund of Overpayment of Estimated Tax, or 2. A first return followed by a superseding return to expedite the processing of their refunds. Individuals in estates and trusts can also take advantage of the first/second return offering discussed next. Only corporations, however, may use Form 4466 to request a refund of estimated taxes. Form 4466/overpaid estimated tax. In many cases, a loss corporation will have overpaid its estimated taxes when, for example, a significant part of the loss was incurred later in the year. A corporation can file Form 4466 after the end of its tax year, but no later than the due date for filing its tax return, not including extensions. Form 4466 must be filed before the corporation files its tax return. An extension of time to file the corporation's tax return will not extend the time for filing Form 4466. As such, calendar year taxpayers must file their 2019 Form 4466 by April 15, 2020. The filing relief granted under Notice 2020-18 was not extended to Form 4466. A corporation should be cautious in estimating the amount of its liability, because overstating the amount of the overpayment reported on Form 4466 could result in interest and penalties, including a penalty under IRC Section 6655H, when the final tax is later determined on the tax return for the year. Multiple Forms 4466 can be filed during the period previously described. Form 4466 has undergone an IRS processing change in recent years. The IRS conducts identity validation on all Forms 4466 by issuing a 1287C letter, usually about a month after the Form 4466 is filed. A unique code is embedded in the letter and a responsible officer, who has authority to bind the company, must call the IRS to verify information on the Form 4466. Form 4466 cannot be validated by individuals authorized to represent a taxpayer before the IRS on a Form 2848, POA. Form 8302 can also be filed with Form 4466 to request an electronic deposit of a refund of at least $1 million. First returns. There are three steps in the traditional first return process. An extension is filed for the corporation's return for the tax year. The taxpayer files a first return that generates a refund. Within the period ending with the extended due date of return, the taxpayer files a superseding return that effectively becomes the taxpayer's return for that year. 1. A corporation may desire to file its Form 1120, U.S. Corporation Income Tax Return, or other corporate return, as soon as possible after its year-end to obtain a refund, on an accelerated basis. As a result, questions may arise as to what constitutes a sufficient initial return, first return, how complete a first return must be, and which schedules must be included in the first return filed by the taxpayer. Each return must meet minimum requirements as discussed in this tax alert and must, 1. Be filed on the proper form. 2. Supply enough information to permit the IRS to calculate tax. 3. Be properly signed under penalty of perjury. 4. Represent an honest and reasonable attempt to satisfy the requirements of the tax law. And 5. Be e-filed when required by the regulations unless a waiver to permit filing a paper return is obtained. If a first return is deemed incomplete, the taxpayer's refund will be delayed, the statute of limitations for assessment will not start running, and the taxpayer could face penalties. There has been little explanation or discussion of what the IRS considers to be the minimum acceptable first return. There is some support, however, for not including certain information reporting forms with an original loss return when a superseding return is expected to be filed. The first return should include the taxpayer's best estimate of subpart F income, U.S. shareholder calculation of guilty, and IRC Section 250 deduction for FII, in the computation of taxable income or loss reported on such return, based on the best available information at the time. At a minimum, the first return should include at least one Form 5471, information return of U.S. persons with respect to certain foreign corporations, although it is recommended for the first return to include completion of Form 5471 for each of the taxpayer's substantive foreign entities. Estimates included in the first return should represent good faith best estimates, for example, not book numbers imported into the return, and should be reflected as such in the return. The supporting files should document the consideration of the basis of any estimates used. Further, a white paper disclosure should be attached to the return explaining the purpose of the filing to the IRS and the taxpayer's intent to perfect the first return with a superseding return. A superseding return is a return that is filed before the due date or extended due date when a corporation has requested an extension and changes data reported on the prior filed first return. A superseding return becomes the original return for all purposes. As such, and in contrast to a corporate amended return, a return filed as a superseding return must include all final information, and not just information that changed from the prior filed return. A superseding return that must be e-filed must be a complete XML filing of the entire return, with all required forms, schedules, and attachments, XML or PDF, if applicable. A taxpayer filing a superseding return must indicate the return as such by selecting the superseded return checkbox, designation, in the software or the return will be rejected as a duplicate filing. Implications. There are various filing dates and return filing order that should be kept in mind to achieve the appropriate results. The Form 4466, Corporation Application for Quick Refund of Overpayment of Estimated Tax must be filed by the due date of the return without extensions. If filing a first return and a superseding return, the form should be filed in the following order. Form 7004, Application for Automatic Extension of Time. Form 1120, U.S. Corporate Income Tax Return, the first return. A superseding Form 1120, before the due date of the return, including extensions. Start speech end. Speech.
All right, family, I hope you're ready. We told you we was going to get into the truth about the income tax, part four. See, just as a recap, part three discussed the fact that if you're not using this particular OMB form, and I'm going to give you the OMB once again for those that didn't get it. See, here you can see at the top of the form, in the upper right-hand corner, it says OMB number 1545-0067. Now, that matches the entry of the CFR table. And what title is on this form? Form 255, which is for foreign earned income. And what does that say underneath that title? For use by United States citizens and resident aliens only. Now, does Form 1040 says anything about who is supposed to use it? No, it does not. But Form 2555 says foreign earned income, which states who is supposed to use it. It says United States citizens and resident aliens only. This is the form that is listed in the law as being required to satisfy the information reporting requirements associated with the individual statutory limitations and liabilities for the income tax on taxable income, which is imposed by Section 1, Chapter 1, of the income tax. And it's the same form shown as being required under Section 6012, which was cited by the IRS itself in the Notice 609. I'll mention that here again. Under the law, we find that the income tax for citizens other than federal source kickback appears to be related only to foreign income. Remember, we started with the general index for the United States Code next and found that under the income tax, under citizens, it only references foreign countries. And here again, we find that the only form actually required under law requires only foreign income. The law is constant. and consistent so far, isn't it? It doesn't agree with what we are told to believe by the IRS, but it agrees with itself without contradiction, doesn't it? So what was the proper legal use of Form 1040? Now we get to part four, the truth about the income tax. Part four. The next document will help explain this. You can find it on the Treasury Decision 2313, which deals with the income taxes. Here's a heading. Treasury Department, Officer or Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, Washington, D.C., and this was done March 21st, 1916. It's going out to all collectors of the Internal Revenue. Under the decision of the Supreme Court of the United States in the case of Bruschieber versus Union Pacific Railroad Company, this was decided upon in January 21st of 1916. It is hereby held that the income accruing to the non-resident aliens in the form of interest from the bonds and dividends on the stock of domestic corporations is subject to the income tax imposed by the Act of October 3rd, 1913. October 3rd, 1913. So if I ask you, when was the actual act put in place that imposed the initial income tax, you will respond with, it was done October 3rd, 1913. Let me see if y'all paying attention. How far are we from October 3rd? And if you know we're not that far from it, what does that imply about this, those that are subject to the income tax? I'll keep going. Non-resident aliens are not entitled to the specific exemptions designated in the paragraphs of paragraph C of the income tax law, but are liable for the normal and additional tax upon the entire net income from all property owned in every business, trade, and profession carried on in the United States, computed upon the basis prescribed in the law. The responsible heads, agents, or representatives of non-residential aliens who are in charge of the property the responsible heads, agents, and representatives of non-resident aliens who are in charge of the property owned or businesses carried on within the United States shall make a full and complete return of income therefrom on Form 1040, revised, and shall pay any and all taxes, normal and additional, assessed upon the income received by them in behalf of their non-residential alien principals. The person, firm, company, co-partnership, corporation, joint stock company or association, an insurance company in the United States, citizens or resident alien in the whatever capacity, acting, having the control, receipt, disposal, or payment, or fixed or determinable annual and periodical gains, profits, and incomes of whatever kind to a non-resident alien under any contract or otherwise, which payment shall represent income of the non-resident alien from the exercise of any trade and profession within the United States, shall deduct and withhold from such annual and periodic gains, profits, income, regardless of amount, paid to the office of the United States government, authorized to receive the same sum as will be sufficient to pay the normal tax of 1% imposed by law, and shall make an annual return on Form 1042. This is the only place that I have ever been able to find the proper explanation, actually any explanation whatsoever from the United States government for the proper use of Form 1040. It's called the Treasury Decision of 2313. and it was handed down in 1916. It instructs the collectors of the Internal Revenue on how to implement the income tax laws as opposed under the 16th Amendment. This Treasury decision is the result of a Supreme Court ruling referencing the first paragraph under Brush Hour versus the Union Pacific Railroad Company, which was decided upon on January 21st, 1916, and from which it's hereby states, it is hereby held that the income accruing to non-resident aliens in the form of interest from bonds and dividends on the stock of domestic corporations is subject to the income tax imposed by the Act of October 3rd, 1913. The second paragraph states non-resident aliens are not entitled to specific exemptions designated in the paragraph C of the income tax law, but are liable for the normal and additional tax upon the entire net income from all property owned and every business, trade, or profession carried on in the United States, computed upon the basis prescribed in the law. Now, the first paragraph says that the non-resident aliens are subject to the tax. The second paragraph says that non-resident aliens are liable for the tax and that they are not allowed to claim the exemptions designated as paragraph C. That implies to the citizens, that implies that citizens are allowed to claim the exemptions in the paragraph C and that citizens are not liable for the tax because they are not subject to the tax. Because it was not specified in the paragraph one that citizens are subject. Now, let's read the third paragraph and keep in mind that we're going to look for a paragraph C in the United States Code that explains citizens from the income tax point of view. Well, the third paragraph says, the responsible heads, agents, and representatives of non-resident aliens who are in charge of the property owned or businesses carried on within the United States shall make full and complete return of income therefrom on the Form 1040, revised, and shall pay any and all tax, normal and additional, assessed upon the income tax received by them in behalf of their non-resident alien principals. Now, there's the proper legal use. Now, there's the proper legal use of Form 1040. It is to be used by the United States citizens to report the income of his or her foreign principals. It is not to be used to report the citizens' own personal and domestic income. Again, this is the only place where I have ever seen a legal explanation from the government for the proper legal use of Form 1040. And now I think you know why. See, Form 1040 is to be used by withholding agents to report the income of the foreign principals. It is not to be used by the United States citizens to report their own income. And that's why voluntary self-assessment and voluntary compliance are so important to the IRS, because the current mythical system doesn't work unless the citizen voluntarily misapplies the law and uses the wrong form to mistakenly, voluntarily assess his own domestic income for the foreign income tax. See, Form 1040 is also properly required to claim certain credits and deductions. We're going to discuss this later, as well as for the federal employees to utilize and minimizing the kickback duties under Title IV United States Code 111. See, the Treasury decision of 2313 referenced the Supreme Court decision of Bushiber versus the Union Pacific Railroad Company. So it is time to step back and get a little background information. Now, before I give you the background information, because this is the truth about the income tax, let's recap, shall we? Not only are you using the wrong form, and not only are you misinformed, you are actually reporting the wrong income to the wrong people. Instead of reporting your income, you're supposed to be reporting some other entity's income as taxable. Creditors, let me help you out. Creditors who receive taxes versus paying taxes, they learn how to do what they call an 8302 return, because it was the lender lending his credit all over town and hadn't gotten it restored back to the estate. So you can report that income to the powers that be, and they will gladly process that return. And matter of fact, if you stuck on a sleepy, creepy Joe waiting on your stimulus to come, or you're waiting on a past returns you filed with the system and it's still floating around in cyberspace, well, you can simply do an 8302 return and just simply point out the fact of all of the individuals that you've given your credit to, which is taxes that's owed to the estate, and then you can collect those taxes. You'll probably get those returns a whole lot faster than waiting on sleepy, creepy Joe. You know why? Because waiting on sleepy, creepy Joe, you don't understand. You're filling out the wrong forms to start with. Sleepy, creepy Joe, even though he's halfway, semi, or fully blown, in full-blown dementia, even in his righteous mind, he ain't going to tell you the truth about the income tax. No president will. Even Donald Trump, he said, look, if you don't like the code, change it. Implying that you have a choice when it comes to the type of position you take. Donald didn't lie. He didn't always tell you all to, you know, he didn't sit you down like you were 3 years old either, but that's not his job. See, we got so comfortable in stuff giving everybody certain blames and, you know, being victims in all this that we don't even want to read the instruction manual, because these individuals who are hiding this information about your estate, they didn't hide it very well. Well, you're not looking for it either. You'd rather go play a scratch-off and hit the lottery. Keep listening, because if you listen long enough, you'll learn something. Now, before I go into the breakdown of the background and history, I'm going to open up the call line just to see who's paying attention. Let's see. Let's see. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is going to be 0375. I'm checking in to see if you got any questions, comments, and concerns, or concerns or anything you've heard up until this point, either in this class or previous classes, or if you just got a question in general.
Yeah, I actually have a few, so I don't know if I should just ask a couple and then we cycle back to me at the end. But this is like the life insurance stuff, like that was really interesting. So for example, one of the questions that I have is, they said something that they use a product to guarantee the funds of a life insurance. Do you know what they were referring to or what product they were referring to?
Yes, it's actually going to be called, for all intents and purposes. All right, in most whole life policies, you're going to have what they call a cash value. Now, the policy that Chris was referring to is a special universal whole life. Because you already, I think you already are in a life product, you're getting all the stuff situated in it. I can really go into some details on that. I think that we got your consultation set up for tomorrow, I think. And we can really go into, because see, it depends upon the position that you're in. Like, we'll lay out the universal life. I will lay out the term. I will lay out just insurance in general, everything from what you heard him talk about, which is basically a corporate-owned policy. You remember when they brought up, have you heard about BOLI? And he said, it's kind of like the same thing. They just added their own acronym to it. So what he said was it's really a trust-owned policy, what we call a TOLI. You know, I don't want to blow your mind. I want to open your mind. The type of policy that he was referring to is a specific type of universal whole life, and it's being converted into some sort of COLI. These are acronyms, corporate-owned life insurance, or TOLI, a trust-owned life insurance. And so it depends upon the combinations, the magnitude and benefits you'll get.
Okay, yeah, because that was the other thing I was going to ask, is when he said that you could have multiple life insurance policies.
Yes.
How do we get that? Well, I guess that's all, how do we get that set up? And like,
just basically the same, like, for example, I'm going to give you kind of a visual. Think about it. I want you to put your God's eye on and just envision this. Okay. You can, as a entrepreneur, you can establish a policy that you can use in that particular format. Matter of fact, hold on for one second. Don't go nowhere. Just hold on, because I'm just going to get real good and everybody's trying to call in. Hold on. Just give me a second. I'm going to come back to you. Just listen to this right quick till I come back. All right, family. Now we're in part two, dealing with the truth about the income tax. Let's just recap from the previous paragraph, shall we? Talking about federal employees, it says, please note that only people who are subject to this duty by clear statutory language are federal employees. The effect of Section 86 identifies what is really is a kickback of the part of the property agreed under employment contract to be paid for the labor of the federal government employee. By this act, the amount of compensation contractually agreed to was unilaterally diminished by one party to the agreement, which was Congress, without the consent of the other party, the federal employee. A unilateral change in the employment contract of all persons already in the employ of the federal government was and is not legal, and the conduct of the United States judges for the next 7 years proves it, as they refused to pay this duty until after 1932, of course. Thus becoming, according to the IRS, the very first tax protesters in American history. The judges understood that the result of arranging for the withholding of a 3% of compensation tax was due to federal government employees under the existing contracts and was a deprivation of property and liberty without due process of the law, which was volatile to the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. That's the recap. Part two. The truth about the income taxes. The judges refuse. In 1863, Supreme Court Justice Tenney sent a letter to the Secretary of Treasury attacking implementation of Section 86 on the compensation of federal judges as being unconstitutional. This letter was also published as a Supreme Court decision under 157 United States Statute 701. In it, Justice Tenney states, the act in question, as you interpret it, diminishes the compensation of every judge 3%. And if it can be diminished to that extent by the name of a tax, it may in the same way be reduced from time to time at the pleasure of the legislator. Here you can see that the judges understood the effect of this law, which was a diminishment by the name of a tax. They knew it was not actually a tax, but a forced debt obligation. In this country, there exists no circumstances on which a person lawfully can be forced to accept the debt against their will. The judges chose to exercise their right to refuse to accept this debt. The facts presented above were expressed by the Supreme Court in the Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Tax Company case in 1895. This is what they said. Subsequently, in 1869, the question arose whether the law which imposes such a tax upon them was constitutional. The opinion of the Attorney General thereon was requested by the Secretary of Treasury. The Attorney General, in reply, gave an elaborate opinion advising the Secretary of Treasury that no income tax can be lawfully assessed and collected upon the salaries of those officers who were in office at the time the statute imposing the law was passed. Holding on this subject, the views expressed by Chief Justice Tenney, his opinion is published in Volume 13 of the opinion.
Okay. Sorry about that. So let me bring you back in. All right. The different types of, how can I say it? The different types of insurances. You got TOLI, which is trust-owned life insurance. You have COLI, which is corporate-owned life insurance. And then you have BOLI-owned life insurance. So, again, from what I was stating earlier, it depends upon the combinations that you get to determine the benefits and so forth. But let's elaborate on how can you have more than one policy. Well, as a trustee can have many beneficiaries. So it's just as many beneficiaries as you have, you can establish another policy and repeat the process all over again. So you can actually get a $1 million policy, you know, from one perspective. And if you got 15 beneficiaries, each beneficiary can have a $1 million policy, which is basically like opening your own private bank again with the policy. Don't you think about policies as their own private banks? And depending upon the face amount of the policy, which will let you know how much initial capital you're working with each bank. Now let me ask you a question. If you're going to partake in real estate, and let's say it takes in general, it takes basically in any type of general liability insurance. Like, is there any type of general liability insurance you have to have as a real estate agent or someone in real estate? Do you have to have a general liability insurance to practice, you know, in real estate or real estate investing?
As an investor, no, but it's recommended that you have some kind of umbrella insurance to protect you.
Mm-hmm. How much is that face amount of that insurance?
Usually they say to get at least $1 million coverage as an umbrella policy for all your LLCs.
Okay. So I want you to think about that. I want you to apply that to yourself. Now, if you are actually yourself, you're considered in commerce to be a financial institution, and all things that are in the public are basically a utility. And if you're going to be doing commerce in the public, you got to be what? Bonded and insured. And the minimal general liability insurance you got to have dealing with the public is $1 million. Wouldn't it make sense you would have at least $1 million life insurance policy on yourself?
Yes.
Okay. So it really wasn't hidden very well. It's just we don't think about it that way. So, okay, now, how you get more than one policy is you're going to have what? More than one Article 9 security interest. You're going to have more than one beneficiary. You're going to have more than one situation. I think that for every – if you're in real estate, this is just me. I'm thinking out loud. I'm being creative. I think that every time you partake on selling a property, you should open up another policy. I think you should open up a policy and use that as a way to finance the house. That's what everybody else does who knows this.
Okay, because that's what I was going to get. Oh, yeah, this makes – because you actually answered my question from before, how you get funding to instead of going to a bank to get a loan. This
right.
seems like so much more of a no-brainer. So if we have a trust, mm-hmm. and let's say, for example, because what I do right now is I have an LLC for each property that I buy. So let's
right.
say, for example, the old way of thinking of how my attorney told me to do it is I would have like an umbrella LLC. So I have my one LLC that's either Wyoming or Nevada or one of the states that's protected would then own
mm-hmm.
all the other LLCs. So every time I
mm-hmm.
purchase a property, I put that in one LLC. So let's say I have like 10 LLCs for each property that I own, and then I have one LLC that owns all 10 properties or all 10 LLCs. Then when
mm-hmm.
I set up the trust, and maybe this is a deeper question, but more specifically in relation to this insurance, then like would you structure it where like each LLC is a beneficiary, or is that considered commingling, or
okay.
I guess maybe the bigger question that I've
right.
actually
uh-huh. Yeah, you're in the ballpark. So here's how you would typically approach that? You would have some sort of operating agreement, because we're going to get to the money shot, because we just kind of revealed in part four the truth about the income tax. It's talking about foreign entities. It's talking about foreign income. Here's middle of the road question. If you got LLCs and LLPs and associations and corporations and companies, all these entities have what they call EIN numbers, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is those EIN numbers tied to a social?
Well, the LLCs, social, well, not a social security number to an individual, though.
Okay, so you have tax ID numbers that you think are potentially associated with a Social Security number, right?
Well, I thought the whole purpose of LLC is that you don't have a EIN, you don't have a Social Security number, you have an EIN number.
Right. So if you ever applied for an EIN number, the question is, did you use the social to apply for the EIN?
Well, I usually don't apply. Usually, my attorneys do that for me. As part of our asset protection strategy, so they'll be like my agent. So my name's nowhere,
right,
on the application forms.
All right. So I want you to just reverse engineer that, because you got the answer in your hand. Okay. Here's the rule. Individuals who don't practice separation of powers find themselves in they're building their own prison, if that makes sense. They are not, you know, it's like digging a grave, but throwing the dirt up in the air and throwing it on yourself. You know, you're digging your own grave, so to speak. You know, you're burying yourself when you're using the social in the middle of the transaction. But like you just said, if you take the legal approach of using an agent who's using some other number, you know, as long as it wasn't your number, you're allowed to operate in that corporate veil. Now, inside that corporate veil, you want to maximize that position, so the most protected vehicle wouldn't be the LLC. It would be what? Trust. See, the trust gets to act like an LLC, but it's really a trust. So you get the best of both worlds without that liability. You just answered a major question, and you don't even realize it. You don't use your number. A number may have to be used as long as it's not your number. An agent's number will suffice. So that's kind of where really what you're going to look at when it comes to these policies is, if I have a corporate-owned policy, what are my benefits versus a trust-owned policy? I just kind of let you know, if we're talking about a totem pole, those of you don't know what a totem pole is, you've seen them in the movies, you know, where they had like the Indian figurehead at the top and you had the feet at the bottom. Well, at the top of the totem pole, trust sits at the top, so it's the head. And the individual sits at the bottom, it's the feet. So you want to literally be on top, the position of control, because it's control everything in commerce. As long as you're controlling everything, you don't have to own it. But guess what? If it happens to be any type of ownership, let it be a company, corporation, or LLC that you have what? Control over. Because if you have control over it, you can determine the outcome. You're not supposed to use the social in commerce. So don't. Now, when it comes to these policies, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
So when it comes to these policies, you're on the scary line, so I'm going to go ahead and say it. When you deal with individuals, have the individual get a policy and then convey that policy to a company or corporation or trust, and then engage into private banking scenario that you just heard. And then the options will become that much more clear, because a corporate-owned policy lets you have more than one policy because you got more than what? More than one company. You know, if you got a trust-owned policy, you can have more than one policy because you're going to be dealing with what? More than one trust. Watch this. When you got an individual policy, it's not that you can't get another policy. Like, when I sold insurance, I've come into households where the husband got a policy and the wife got a policy. Doesn't mean you can't have more than one policy. It's just the husband has a policy and the wife has a policy. There's some wisdom in what I'm saying in that. See, the wife, before she got married, she had a maiden name. I'm not losing you, Emma. Are you following what I'm saying? She had a maiden name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She has. So I want you to think about the wife. This is the ultimate way we really get how the trust works. I want you to think about a wife. Before she was married, she had the name of what? Her father and her mother. So she was her own individual trust unto her family, her father and her mother. Then she went off, fell in love, and then she married her high school sweetheart, her love in that regard. And then she put down the name of her mother and father, and she took on her husband's name. So they formed a what? A new trust. Now, I want you to really think about this. In what you call Western culture, marriage wasn't about you marrying the one you love. It was about controlling property. They just had a civilized way of doing it. They had a religion that was catered towards it, and it promoted holy matrimony. But whenever the pastor says, by the powers vested in me, where do you think those powers came from that's vested in him? Think it came from the Bible, or did it come from the state?
The state?
There you go. So when you marry the one you love, you really didn't marry the one you love. You married the state. If you don't think so, wait till it don't work out. See, the powers that invested into the pastor binded you to the state. So the state is now a third party in your situation. And the minute it go wrong and you and him and her can't get along anymore, then you're off into what? Go to the state. See, it wasn't until women's live here in America where it's just very recently that the woman, because she wanted to be equal to the man for some reason, not saying she wasn't equal, she was actually greater than the man. She wanted equality in the world of commerce. Now she gets all of the benefits. But you know, going to prison is a benefit. Like, wait a minute, Brazil. Going to jail is a benefit. Yeah, because some countries, they don't take you to jail. They have you dig a hole out back. And they ask you what you want on your tombstone. Any famous last words. They're not going to get cable television, dish network, three hots in the car, air conditioning. Like, no, that's too dumb. No. Not that you're a criminal and you're a vagabond on society. No, certain countries, they cut your hand off when you steal stuff. You know, you got two times to get something really good. You know, I'm just saying. Other countries have. So here in Western civilization that we call America, going to jail and going to prison is a privilege. It's a benefit. And so they have to be able to perpetuate these benefits by these contracts. Your driver's license is a contract. Your marriage license is a contract. All these things are really a form of bonds and sureties. And they're being monetized. You take what you just learned. You line up your beneficiaries, your agents, or your trustees, and that's how many policies you can acquire. And we'll go over it, so don't try to retain it all in one sitting. We'll go over it.
Okay. Okay, because that's the other thing, too, is I'm also trying to figure out, like, and this might be a beginner's question because I'm still trying to read some of the, mm-hmm. the books and so forth. But
right.
When I have the LLCs, as a single member LLC, it's really me as the individual. And so one of the things that I kind of started seeing on some of these trusts is where they say you have to be careful because you're supposed to have the three aspects, like the
seller, right.
or grantor,
right.
the trustee and the beneficiary.
Can't be the only
but
member, there
you
go.
You can't be
right.
all three
right.
because that's how you get in trouble. But
right. you,
so
you,
for me,
you,
so,
you
so,
can't you, – Right, you can't be the only member. Like it can be more than one trust. You know, you can be the trustee, the settler, and beneficiary. You just can't be the only beneficiary. You can't be the only. You know, it's got to be other members. You know, you can be all three, one of the three. You just can't be the only. You know, that's where they really nail you to the cross. Like you say, well, I'm the trustee, the beneficiary, and the settlor. It's like, wait a minute, where are the rest of the people? And then when you don't have no response to that, then they're going to be like, this is not a trust, this is something else. They're going to call it alter ego and everything else, and then you got to answer all these other questions. So you have to look the part. But as long as you
and
look
that's
the
something
part.
I see. So, if I have like all my different LLCs as a beneficiary, is that still considered an alter ego because I'm really the one who owns the LLCs, or that's
long
the part
you, long as you got
confused.
An operating agreement showing that's how you're operating. See, as long as you spell out this is how I'm operating up front, then no, you haven't violated anything. You just need to have an operating agreement that spells out that's what you're doing.
Okay, so then theoretically, let's say we have the business trust and I decide to put all my LLCs in the business trust. Can I have like that one umbrella one that owns one maybe be a trustee or be a settlor? And then if I have the other ones be the beneficiary, does that then mean I could have a policy for each of those LLCs? And then
you sure
am
can.
I also...
You can have a policy for each one. You can designate them that way. As long as you got an agreement that gives you that ability, is no one can tell you no when you're the author of what we're talking about. There isn't a magic form that lets you, you know, like just grants you all the permission. You got to create that document. So anything that you can think of that you want to do, the fundamentals are you can't be the only member. So as long as you're not the only member, you can have an agreement which will allow you to have policies on each one of those designators in that regard. And the tax code is very favorable when you take this position that we're talking about because it will assist you in collecting the taxes that's owed to the estate. See, taxes are voluntary. But when we say they're voluntary, people say, well, I mean, do you, I don't have to pay a tax? No, you can choose. Listen to this. No, you don't have to pay a tax, but if you're not paying a tax, that doesn't mean you just sit on the bench and do nothing. That means you what? Collect the taxes. That's where trusteeship really comes in. Most people, they get into not having to pay a tax, so they fall into that that element in conversation without realizing that if I'm not paying a tax, I'm supposed to be collecting the tax. They get in trouble when they become stagnated. They're not paying a tax nor collecting a tax. So when they finally are questioned, they don't know which way to sway or go because they're not in trust. They ain't substantiating any of their transactions. They're in the wrong position, and they're calling cash the wrong thing. Cash is not a gap item. And see, that's that. And most people, this is what happens. Most people get some of the information that me and you are talking about where they don't have to pay the tax. But that's, you remember, you know, trustees are fully responsible. They're heavily engaged. That's why they get the benefit of not having that level of liability because they're fully responsible. Some people are so used to being beneficiaries where it's already somebody else's responsibility. They want to be the trustee but not do the fiduciary duties of being a trustee. Trustees collect the taxes that's owed to the estate. So if you're not going to pay Uncle Sam, then you should be using Uncle Sam to get paid. Some people say, well, I don't want to have anything to do with Uncle Sam. Well, if you're going to have your own power, your own, you know, your own food, your own clothes, you're going to live off the grid and live off Mother Nature, then I concur with that. But unless you got your own way of manufacturing the stuff that you need in order for you to be really off the grid, there's a smart way to do commerce. Commerce is designed in such a way for people who get this, they love it. People who don't, hate it. I think that's a masterpiece within itself because it has to be that way in order for it to really work. The ones that really love what we're talking about treat their families like it's a business. They operate in trust. And the glass is not half empty. The glass is half full. People who hate it have been buying into the propaganda machine. So the pro-pagan agenda got you funding your own imprisonment. And you will like it. And you're not to question. One day I'm going to show you a website that's going to kind of reveal some of that stuff to you. You're almost there.
Okay.
Before the end of the week, we'll have that conversation.
Okay. And then I don't know how much more time I have, but I'm sorry, everyone, if
it's
I'm
okay.
hogging all the time. But and I'll try to combine these together because I think they're all kind of interrelated. So the last piece where he said that you could draw down the death penalty policy immediately. How do you do that? A, and then B, is that also included as part of the tax-free portion? So not only the cash value, but the funds you receive from the death benefit, is that all tax-free? And then the final one is are life insurance bulletproof from creditors, including the cash value in which you're drawing down from the living benefit?
Right. When you draw down from the living benefit and you're in a trust-owned policy, that is not taxable income. Remember, all the things I'm revealing to you about the income tax is telling you who's actually responsible for taxes. So if you follow who the tax code applies to, unless you're a federal employee and we're talking about foreign earned income under treaty, you can make whatever you want to make and report it in such a way where you're not liable, because the only thing you have to report as taxable income is if you're a federal employee or you're doing business with the social, and if you're engaged into firearms, alcohol, and tobacco. So it's kind of easy to not – here's the word for today. It's easy for you to be considered a disregarded entity. Disregarded entity. I want you to write that down and study that. When we have our conference tomorrow, we go over the policies and stuff, I want you to have a good concept of disregarded entity, because your goal is to become a disregarded entity when it comes to being held accountable under taxable income. See, if your business is not under the alcohol and firearms or tobacco perception, you're considered by the IRS as a disregarded entity. If you operate in trust and you're using all these different trusts to spend down revenues that are held in a policy, that's outside the fold. There's a special form for these type of trusts that they send to the IRS. It's a special 740 type form. I almost gave it to you. I'll go over it, though. It's a special form you fill out. So you're allowed to do exactly as you just expressed. It's about your accounting and being in the right position.
Okay. And then how are they drawing down the debt policy right away?
Basically, the policy is being put in a position by a third-party entity that's saying, look, in order for you to grow the trust res, you're going to need this revenue now versus later. Now go back to what he was saying about having a guarantee. It has a guaranteed date. See, in every whole life policy, they have a mortality table. So they say, yeah, around 67, 70 years old, you're this weight, you're eating this, that. Yeah, if you don't take care of yourself, then, or you take care of yourself, you can probably look to kind of be out of here in the next 50 to 70 years. So they put that guarantee there that whether you're here or not here, it's in full repetition mode after it reaches that mark. Here's what you don't realize. You can determine where that mark is. Like if you got Keyman insurance, you can decide tomorrow that you want to retire to the private. So Keyman insurance will actually, almost like if you died, you just retired to the private. So you get to cash out that benefit. They get to pay, they pay you to retire. I go back to the beginning of this class, what I was saying with my brother, and I want to tell him so badly. But let me say it another way. It's not that I want to tell him so badly. And I know if he's listening, he's going to be like, oh, my God. I'm not picking on you. I'm just using the situation to shed some light. But, you know, we got this. I've been engaged in insurance for over 50 years. Not 50, over 15 years. I'll say it that way. Over 15 years of my life, and I'm 47, I've been engaged in two insurance. And this is before I knew what trusts really were and how I'm using it now. So I've been a great promoter that insurance was never death insurance. It was really life insurance that you can enjoy, because I knew even then that people were enjoying annuities while they were alive. Not in their golden age when they were retiring either. It was just, I had a certain class of clients that, first of all, here's what they all did. They made more than $250,000 a year. This is what I noticed. So I'm going to back up. Before I knew about trust, they were entrepreneurs. They were considered nuclear families. You know, the wife, the kid, the dog, the white picket fence, 2.3 kids. They were entrepreneurs, so they needed a whole lot of insurance when they were young, because the death of the breadwinner would be devastating to the family. But as they got older, they needed less insurance and more revenue. Why? Because the kids are grown, the house is paid off, and they're looking to retire. So they had an annuity clause that allowed them, when they got ready to retire, after the kids went to college, they can enjoy their golden years off the policy. That's like insurance 101. And I used to tell all of my people, look, if your income got to a certain level, if it's at least equivalent to $250,000, that's like a signal you're sending to the system. Like, why do you think banks start, or let me start, you know, end it here. Why do you think FDIC insurance only insures you up to $250,000 a year? Because if you can make $250,000 a year, you can count, you know, two things is for sure. You are above the average income, the working class. And if you are above the average, you probably have been exposed in your profession to some of these wealth-building products. I'm going to be totally honest with you. Most of the interviews that write these policies, they really like marketing to people that know how to make a six-figure income in whatever they're doing. This is why if you are selling real estate or selling insurance and you're really good at multi-level marketing and you can yield so much, you know, per month in premium, they will actually give you a direct commission from the products you're selling, which perpetuated, I don't have to make $1,000 a week. I can control my income. If I need to make $10,000 a week, I need to do that much more of business. But that scares the bejesus out of someone who's used to a 9-to-5 and being told when to get up, take the break, eat their cheese crackers, be back on the clock. You know, some people, they like that structure. But now I get to where my brother's at. You gave almost 17 years of your life to this company, and they just stole your retirement. And I've been telling you, don't go out like, you know, you will feel better if you took your money out of your retirement and set it on fire. If you did that, you would feel better, because you can look me in my eyes and tell me what you did with it. But it's difficult for you to ask the question, well, what happened to the money? And, you know, I felt a certain time, it bothered me a little bit, because it was like, this is my brother. I don't want to, you know, I never want to hurt no one, but it's like, I know what I said, you know, it sent them in a tandem a little bit, because it was like, man. It's like I gave these people 17 years of my life, and they're shutting the plant because of COVID, and my retirement, because I now need it, it ain't there. They call it the American dream because you got to be asleep to believe it. It's a business model. So, being in trust is, there is no tomorrow. There's no alternative to it. Most people that get into trust the right way, this is all they do. Now, I do know a lot of folks that are in trust statutorily. They're doing a whole bunch of stuff. But most folks that are in these common law private trusts, like really into them, this is it. This is all they do. I hope that kind of helped you out a little bit.
Oh yeah, this definitely helps.
Good deal. Any other questions?
No, I'm good for now. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go down the line. I'm going to see if we got anybody else with any other questions, comments, or concerns. Let's see. Let's check in. Let's see what's up. See what's happening. Let's see. Caller, last 4 digits of your number is 6918. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm checking in to see if you got any questions, comments, or concerns over anything we covered tonight or in the past. Speak now.
Well, thanks for clarifying some of the insurance stuff. I was listening to the information about 8302 return.
Yes. Yes.
And just trying to get a little understanding when it said you're saying that you don't do the 1040 return, but you do the 8302 return, but you're supposed to securities? File against the securities that you have out there.
You're supposed to bring back all the securities that are out there, all of the credits that you have issued to all these institutions. As a creditor, you're bringing those securities, those monies, those revenues back to the estate, because every credit that you've ever engaged in was a sacrifice that was made. And literally, in that regard, you literally hold on for a second. Bear with me for a second. So just hold on. Hold on for a second. The truth about the income tax or the IRS fraud exposed. This was written by Thomas Fried. The truth about the income tax, the introduction. The Constitution of the United States of America, the supreme law of the land, establishes a limited federal government in America. Limited means restricted by supreme law. That means that if something is not explicitly authorized in the Constitution, then the federal government is prohibited from engaging in that activity. And the government is, of course, supposed to be also prohibited from doing anything that the Constitution explicitly forbids it from doing. The constitutional framework for taxation. Now, the Constitution, of course, authorizes the federal government to lay and collect taxes in order to establish or ensure the operations of sovereignty of the government and nation. However, because the founding fathers truly did understand the powers of the power to tax is indeed the power to destroy, it does so very specifically and carefully in order to ensure that the taxing authorities would never become the same tyrant, which was the King of England, and his hordes of tax collectors that the Constitution was created in order to permanently vanquish. So the Constitution very carefully divides the power to tax into two categories: direct and indirect taxation. Indirect tax. All right. Sorry about that. Okay. You want to collect the taxes that's owed. You want to literally use your position. What does 8302 returns are literally creditors' return. I don't know how long you was engaged into the class, but I played a clip from a previous class that I did that talked about doing a superseding return. A superseding return as a creditor is a return that sets all other returns the right way. Like, you send a superseding return to collect the taxes that's owed versus you actually being subject to the tax, if that's your position. A superseding return works in conjunction with a form 941X with claim for refund. A superseding return also works with K-1s, certificates of beneficial interest if you have it. This is kind of the position that a creditor does when they, because again, an 8302 return was a debtor's return, so you're doing a return against someone who you gave credit to. So let me just give you the players. Let's say you gave credit to Verizon. So you're going to use a 1040 or a 1041 to report the income that Verizon owes you because you lent your autograph or Article 9 security interest, if you will. I use the autograph just so everybody can identify with that. People who are famous, they don't want your signature on documents. They want what? What do they want? Big brother, I still got you unmuted. What do they want when it comes to, you know, like in the world of commerce? Are people asking you for your signature? Like I said another way, in the world of commerce, everybody wants your signature. They can monetize it, and then if you want your signature to have a value, you autograph something. That makes sense to you?
Yeah, I'm following.
Okay, cool beans. So that kind of cleared it up a little bit for you?
A little bit.
A little bit. Okay, ask your questions.
Well, I mean, I think that's probably as far as I can get.
That's about
right
as far
now,
as you can go right now. That's about
yeah,
as far
I mean,
as you can
I follow it a little bit when you use Verizon as an example. You said with them you would do a 1041 and I mean, I kind of got the idea about the 8302 return, but the superseding return and you was pulling Verizon into the example, I kind of got lost there.
Okay, well, like when you're dealing with Verizon, you've been paying, in one aspect, Verizon sends you a bill every month and you supposedly pay Verizon. But are you giving Verizon gold or silver or are you giving them fiat? Because if you're giving them fiat, you can't pay a debt with a debt. So you really aren't paying Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
You really are giving Verizon credit that you need to get back. Verizon, you thinking if you're a debtor that Verizon sent you a bill and you paid it, but the actuality, Verizon actually gave you a statement of account. Because if you paid your bill, two positive numbers can't equal zero. How can Verizon say you owe $100? So when you get your invoice, it says $100 is what you owe. That's your bill. Then when you pay the bill, as you said, you paid it with fiat, you swipe your card. Well, what's supposed to happen is there's supposed to be a positive $100, and then there's supposed to be a what?
A negative.
A negative, right. But when you look at your receipt, is that what you see?
No.
You see two positive numbers. So how can two positive numbers equal zero? It can't. So you're thinking the transaction is done and it's just began. That's the problem. See, when you're a creditor, you know it just began. It ain't the end. We think when we give someone fiat, oh, that's the end of it. No, that's the beginning of it. Because giving someone fiat, quote unquote, in the public, is the equivalent of giving somebody a gift. Last time you got a gift, what did you do with a gift?
Right.
Last time you got a gift, you enjoyed it, right? You enjoyed the gift.
Right.
You know? All right. So the company enjoyed your gift, a fiat. And they told the IRS that you never paid with gold and silver. You gave them a gift. So you got to balance that book by saying, yeah, I gave them the gift, but I need the gift what? Back. On the book. Don't get lost.
So when you,
right.
Excuse me. So when you do the 8302 return, you're supposed to go through all of everyone that you, I guess, lent your signature to. And you do this. Is this a...
You do a return for each one. This is a... Look, 8302 returns are done every month. Debtors are only locked in to every quarter, end of the year. Creditors do these 8302 returns every 30, 45 days. See, their goal is whatever they spent on the first, they want it back in the account by the end of the month. So they can what? Spend it on the first. Creditors are proactive. They're trying to, whatever they spent on the 1st of October, they're trying to have it back before Halloween because they need to spend it again.
So you do this return one for every
every company that shows you credit.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, what's mm-hmm. the difference between that and I'll bring it up, the 1099 OID process?
The only difference is the OID, it's kind of in the same lane, not same vein, but they're in the same lane. The difference is the OID is one of the other forms you list that information on. Because, see, the OID form is what you're doing to bring, like, the 8302 form is when you add all the math up and then you tell them that's $1 million or more, so use the 8302 form to get this back. You're going to be doing OIDs. You follow what I'm saying?
Okay.
OIDs are with that. The 8302 form is $1 million return form, but you got to have the math to get the what? The $1 million back. And that's where the OIDs come in at.
Gotcha.
We call it an 8302 return because you should be minimally getting back $1 million. Like I used an example with the other student, I want you to think about everything that you ever done in the public where you had to be bonded and insured. Didn't they make you get $1 million insurance policy? Like if you was a contractor and you had to do anything in the public, don't they make you get bonded and insured?
Yes.
And you got to get general liability, and that usually starts at $1 million. So just look at the public. The public makes everyone in the public be bonded and insured. You got to get $1 million policy. Why in the hell won't you have $1 million life insurance policy? If you start a business, you got to have $1 million minimum policy. Who what's more valuable, the company or you? What is the company? It's just a group of people, right?
Right.
Okay, so the greater has influence over the lesser. So when you're out there, your company got $1 million life insurance policy on itself and you don't, what kind of signals are you sending to the universe? Something that's contrary to universal law because the greater has what? Influence over the lesser. You know, we get kind of bent out of shape, so to speak, when we discover these truths and we're like, oh, that's not right. Well, the system isn't bad or good. It's just a tool. The government is there to rule the ones that need to be governed. If you can govern yourself, you don't need government. Matter of fact, the Constitution, you know, and I'm going to say this for tomorrow's class. We're going to go into what the Constitution says about the income tax the right way. And you're going to be surprised. When you hear anyone else talk about, well, the 16th Amendment gave us the ability, when they say gave us, and you're like, well, who is us? Because last time I checked, the only people that are subject to the income tax is those that are engaged into the practice of alcohol, firearms, and tobacco. You're a federal employee, and you're using the social under the 1040, which is voluntary. So I don't know what part of – I don't apply to that we, because none of that applies over here. I'm not a federal employee. Nor am I engaged in alcohol, firearms, and tobacco, and I don't voluntarily put my social on Nathan. Now, when I have passed all three of those tests, well, I'm not supposed to sit on the sideline and not do anything. That's what I'm trying. And see, the Constitution, this is why you're either going to do this the right way or the system is going to kick in and compel you. You know, they'll tell you. Even with this whole COVID thing, we can't force you to do anything, but we can coerce you. If you got to go out of town to see your daughter and you're anti-vax and your daughter needs to see you in a matter of 4 hours, It's a 20-hour trip by vehicle, 25 hours by bus. But if you're going to fly, you're going to have to take the jab and have some sort of card and the other stuff. Did they force you to get the vax? They didn't really force you, but they coerced you because there's no way you're going to meet that obligation unless you go that route. Right. Now, watch this. There's some ways to challenge that and get around that. I'm just using this as an example of coercion. Your government will never force you. They will coerce you. And that's because we don't want to be responsible. Because there's a group of people that is not standing in lines going through the TSA and all that other stuff. But these are the other people. These are people that's got, you know, they're trust fund babies. They own the plane that they're flying on. It's probably them and five other families that have fractional ownership of the plane. So they're going to have to use the plane when everybody else is not using it. They ain't got to do all that stuff. They ain't wearing no mask. They ain't doing all that extra stuff. But you ain't on a plane with them either because you are not the same. It's not personal. It's business. Now, when they interact with something public, yeah, they're coming to your establishment with a mask and all that good stuff because everybody in the public that's serving the public is public officials, and public officials are state actors. They got to learn how to what? Like my mom said, you got to learn how to act in the public. They know how to act. Does that make a little more sense to you?
Yep. Thank you.
All righty. All right. All right. All right. All right. I appreciate everybody's time and energy, man. We're in overdrive, so I can take one more caller and let them ask some questions, and then we can definitely break out of here because I got some stuff coming down the pipeline that you do not want to miss. We started the class a little bit early. You know, I know last week was actually doing these sessions at 9. I had to start this one a little bit early because I got a lot of stuff to do, got in late, so I got to kick it with a couple of folks and get it all together. So let's see what else, see what's up, see what's happening, see if we got anyone else who got any questions here. Caller, last but not least, your number is going to be 1796, 1796. If you're just tuning in or you was in the class earlier, greetings, greetings. I'm checking in to see if you got any questions, comments, or concerns or anything you heard up until this point.
I don't have a lot of questions, but you already know who this is, Brother Ben. You know.
Go ahead.
So I was while you were speaking about the IRS tax forms of 1913, and I looked up, you know, the Fed Act of 1913, right?
Right.
And the close association with these forms in the IRS, there has to be an agency that holds one person, not one person, but holds the people back or the nation back from receiving the same benefits of from receiving the same benefits of the minority, the 1%. So right. Going into the 1913 affairs with the Fed, It stated that the Fed was supposed to be established the stability of the economy of the United States, but it ended up debilitating the economy because 20 years later, that's when we actually the Great Depression was applied, and that's when you had to go into the actual your agreements with welfare and things like that with the United States, and that's when they put you in your class states. So.
Right.
With that being said, right, with after that, that's when inflation came. And now we're at this point now. Like the young man was saying that he was talking about earlier, I think his brother Lamont, the situation that we're going through now with acquiring a home, it's been kind of a great learning lesson because you're learning now, like, that some people understand the system that you're talking about and are working outside of fiat. And some are so stuck on fiat that they don't understand the tax ramifications of fiat. And right. I'm really starting to learn, you know, what the 1040, you know, mm-hmm. our willingness to jump into something because we want it, but we don't understand how to get it back when we send it off. So I'm learning about the forms. My mm-hmm. question is, all right, once you learn the forms and you mm-hmm. you're repetition with it, right?
Right.
Is there a cap on it, or is it like, do they create more once everybody start learning?
Okay, like, here's what the system is not going to do. So I can't say I'm going to just use my lively experience in this existence, my 47 years. Since I've been exposed to this system, my experience is that this system is always going to preserve itself. It's not going mm-hmm. to totally create something where it's not going to be no more. It's going to evolve. Mm-hmm. Western civilization, the modern day business model here,
mm-hmm.
has gone through a series of evolution where when they induce this digital mainframe, you're still going to have those that have it on the computer screen and those that can go to their vault.
Mm-hmm,
and the ones that go to the vault is going to influence the ones that's on the computer screen.
Exactly. So that's what's backing it.
That's what's backing it. So the thing about it is, are you going to stay with the physical possession of it, or are you going to have it in the screen somewhere?
I won't have it in the screen.
Right. Now watch this. The millennials, they don't mind having it in a screen. Like, I was talking to a millennial a few months ago, and I joke about it. You know, they was talking about the whole mm-hmm. COVID thing, and it's like the young people, they just say, oh, it's just an app. It's just an app. You know, look, they're mm-hmm. going to be an app. And mm-hmm. They are so in tune with the technology, I kid you not. You know, I'm a gamer, too. Look, I grew up on the Xbox and the PlayStations and the Nintendos. Mm-hmm. But I remember when there wasn't a game system in everybody's house, and you literally, if you wanted to do stuff, you went outside. Like, being in the house all day was really a punishment when you was a kid. Like, what did I do, Mom? Why I got to be in the house? It's like, you tell your kids, go outside and play. Mom, what did I do to deserve this? Why are you making me go outside? Yeah. You know, it's like, I kind of teased the millennials. I'm like, look, you will go outside or go to your friend's house and you'll throw a tinder tantrum because there's no Wi-Fi. You know, we mm-hmm. went outside and played with sticks, climbed trees, rode bicycles. Look, our mothers mm-hmm. didn't care where we went. My mom told me straight up, she said, look, you can go wherever you want to go. If you can get on that two-wheel bicycle and it'll take you where you want to go and I ain't got to come get you, knock yourself out. Here's my rule. You better be back mm-hmm. in the yard before the street light come on. You can go across the planet and back, but you had to be home before that street light came on. And
that's right.
We had a sense of adventure. We went out in the world. Notice mm-hmm. today, they ain't wanting you all out in nature like that. Your kids are literally mm-mm. being really bred to be bubble children, you know? It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's really weird. Yeah. So
it's really not weird because, all right, let's just talk about mm-hmm. let's talk about 1889 when a lot of the Southerners, our people from the South, went north because of, you know, business or whatever, right?
Right.
So the minority that stayed on the land and fed the land, they actually funded what was happening up north, but they made it look like the South was draining, right? So even with the millennials jumping into the situation where the technical world, you still have mm-hmm. the oil guys and the sharecroppers that are actually funding their profits. So what I'm saying is these documents are actually protecting the ones that have the oil reserves and the physical aspects of things.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And I learned that because I was talking to a young man the other day. He was talking about we were talking about our trust because he's actually a trustee himself. And he mm-hmm. was talking to me about, he was like, well, you know, I can tell a person that has a trust with one thing. He said, do you have your TCU or do you have your certificate of beneficial interest? And I was like, yes, we have both. He's like, okay, what do you have back in it? So then we got into security interests and things like that. So he got into the same thing. He was talking about he's been into real estate for 45 some odd years, and everything that he deals with, every piece of real estate that he deals with has a trust attached to it, and they're beneficiary of the of his main trust. So to make a long story short, when he said that, he said he took he said he took 25% of his assets and actually put it towards the tech world.
Right.
He said he's not going to lose anything. Only thing he's do, only thing he's going to do is gain. So
right.
We just have to learn. I guess we have to learn the systems and what to invest in. Yeah, and when to stay and when to go.
Right. It's an evolution, because see, investing really isn't hard. The hardest thing is is not being afraid to create. I'm gonna say it that way. That's the hardest thing. It's like if you were exposed to this, where you always had to be indoctrinated in certain things, there's no part of the indoctrination when you're in that system that gives you a pat on the back for being creative. Now watch this. If you come from being creative and you step into this, immediately when you get an opportunity to create, that's what fuels you, because you were already creating music, you built stuff, you're a creator of whatever you get involved with. So when you get involved in this, it's plenty of things to create. The thing about this is, it's like the fundamentals give you the tools to build whatever reality you want to build for your family and your legacy. Opposite of what we're saying.
Yeah, I've been a barber, and I'm sorry to cut you off. You helped me understand this last week, and I didn't get a chance to tell you. I've never had a 9-to-5. I've been a barber, man, or off and on, and then I got into true entrepreneurship, and then that failed because I didn't know the policies. But I bartered my whole barbering life, you know, whether I needed a home and car. I didn't know what I was doing in the system. But to make a long story short, today I did something that you told me to do a while ago, about a month ago. I have a lien on my vehicle. You know, we have a loan, right?
Right.
So I asked for the payoff. When I got the payoff document, it said credit. It said credit $700.
Okay.
And then at the bottom it says payoff 12 da 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 da. So she told me, she said, if it's anybody you're showing this to, you know, make sure this is confidential information. Make sure you don't show this to anybody. So I was wondering, I was like, why is she saying this? She was saying that because if I were to show this to you, you'd be like, well, I mean, right here, you got a $5,700 credit right here.
Right.
And I'm looking at it, I'm like, and it had no parentheses, it had no minus, it had plus $5,700. Right. So if I don't claim that at the end of this payoff, that means that bank keeps that.
Right, because it's right there on their ledger.
Right. So that's what everything that we've been talking about now, even those tax credits.
Right.
You know, if we don't know the proper documents, know the procedures, it's like, but we got to look, though. We got to see. We got to see the
You got to inquire. Like you got to inquire.
Yeah.
You got to make the inquiries. You have to. Just like, it's like sometimes, like if we're getting ready to buy stuff, that's when we'll say, well, I'm going to check my credit. What's supposed to happen as a creditor, you're supposed to be doing that every, just like how you tie your shoes, buy clothes. You will be checking your credit if you're a creditor all the time, because what you're going to notice, when you start interacting with these agencies all the time, you're going to learn how to report credit. Like, everybody will say, well, I got to pull credit. And trustees that I deal with, especially ones that got the banking in the box, they're like, I need to learn how to report credit faster. They know how to do it. They're just trying to figure out what's a faster way of doing it, because they've engaged with Experian, TransUnion, Bread Street. Like, I cannot tell you the blessings that are getting ready to come down for everybody that is a notary with this move that Dun & Bradstreet made here in Jacksonville, because and that's what me and the other trustee are going to discuss tonight, because I've been kind of waiting for him to come back out of the wings. They got an open source project where if you got your tech in place, you can do direct reporting. You can do direct reporting. You just got to have your system. You got to have your unit. You got your unit. You can directly report into that system. And it's on a tenfold. So it's like most individuals. But here's the market. I'm gonna put it out there. This in class. Most people think the only way they can get access to their credit report is through these agencies that way, that one way. Go through their portal, pay their fees, get a free credit report, or get, you know, they think that's the only way to get access to their credit report. But if you're a creditor, no one is asking, well, how is the I'm making my mortgage payment, right? And I miss a mortgage payment. How are they reporting negative credit? Nobody's really asking about how they're reporting positive or negative credit. We immediately want to learn, you know, the other way. How do we get credit? You know, how we build trade lines. And then you're stepping deep into the pool when you do that, but it's twofold. Dun and Bradstreet goes all the way back to one president. That's Abraham Lincoln. When you find out what Abraham Lincoln did with the greenbacks, you'll understand and you appreciate the Dun and Bradstreet system. And then we'll have a different conversation. I'll end with this. Once you really understand what I just said about the DMB, the question is, if you don't have a DMB on your straw, what are you waiting on?
Gotcha.
See,
gotcha.
You would go get a DMB for your company, your barbershop, or for whatever company you started with. You won't get a DMB for your straw.
Say no more.
That'll work.
We did that last week for the company. I understand exactly where you're coming from, and stand and hold instead of walking half.
All right. Gotta do it. You got to do it.
Gotcha.
Hey,
and look, I guess when you get a chance later on tonight, just make a schedule to actually talk about the insurance.
Yes, I am. Matter of fact, I'm doing the scheduling because I got arbitrations majority of the day. I got a whole bunch of stuff going on, so I'm going to get the schedules going tonight. I got it.
Awesome. Thank you again, too, Brother Ben.
All righty. All right, look. Family, peace and love. I appreciate everybody's time and energy. Look, stay engaged on 365. I got Brandon in there, and I got some new stuff coming, especially for those that are getting ready to jump into the banking in the box and some tactical trust. Stay on 365 Live. I appreciate everybody's time and energy. If you got any other questions, comments, or concerns, you know how to get at me. Just send me a message directly in Bitrix, and we'll go from there. But until tomorrow, we appreciate everybody's time and energy. And I'm going to say peace and love, family. Peace and love.
Holy are you, holy are you. There is no God but you. There is no God but you.
I need to talk to y'all for a minute.
Praise be the Lord.
Get serious for a minute.
Holy are you.
Why they call me the God MC, the lyricist. Trace this staff to the roots from Genesis. The world wonder, I'm still standing like pyramids. Design so vivid, every brick it got a story to tell. My rhyme flow different like a hieroglyphic. Mind prolific, infinite, like mathematics. The first language, now add that and add graphic. Go ahead, they gon' let the blocks know it's the gospel. Life's new manual.